Hello, everyone, and welcome to War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast. Come to you, as always, from deep within the Outer Rim, far beyond the watchful eyes of the Galactic Empire. My name is John Mark Tolley, and joining me, as always, are my two co-hosts, Garrett and Will. Guys, how are you today?
What up, yo?
Doing well. Yes, doing well.
Yes. Before we get started on our review of episode 11 of Andor, the penultimate. Is that how you say
penultimate? Penultimate.
Yes.
Words.
We were hit with some big news recently with the announcement of Bob Iger being renamed once again CEO of Disney. This is not exactly, it's Star Wars adjacent, but it's still, I think it affects everything in the Disney brand, because he will now be the head honcho of the entire, what can we expect from a Iger ran Disney now, do you think?
Well, first of all, I think that one of the things I've been saying since, there's a lot, being a park goer and a big Disney Parks fan, there's been a lot of shade thrown at Bob Chapek, particularly by cast members, Imagineers, that kind of thing, and Disney fans, and part of it. As far as the parks go, from a dollars and cents thing, they've actually made money. They've actually been doing pretty well. Of course, they've charged everything. They've taken stuff away that was once free and charged for it. So, there's all sorts of things that they've done. From a business perspective, I get it. I understand it. But it was their streaming service and the issue with that really caused Disney stock to plummet. That, among other things, unrelated to the parks. But so I'm very curious to see, this move and how it might affect the Disney Plus streaming service, Hulu, ESPN. Are they gonna change the model by which they release things? Are they gonna add more things? That's kind of where my thinking is taking me right now. That it's or are they going to charge more for it? I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, and Disney Plus is actually probably one of the more expensive streaming platforms that's out there. It's what, $79-$80 a year now or something like that. And
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I know it was. It started off as the least expensive.
Well, and then from an annual perspective, yeah. But there are some platforms that are decreasing. Well, a lot of them, like Netflix and stuff like that, have increased their costs, but they don't charge on an annual basis. They charge on a yearly basis. But I just saw something posted on our local.
Did you say they don't charge on an annual basis? They charge on a yearly basis. Isn't that the same thing? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call you out, but I'm so tired right now that I almost let that go.
I just realized that's almost the verbal equivalent of the your and your.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
What I was gonna say is, I just saw something on our local ABC affiliate's Instagram page, where they are promoting that for as a part of a Black Friday sale for Hulu, because Hulu is officially owned by Disney. That if you sign up for Hulu on their Black Friday deal for the next year, it would be $1.99 a month for 12 months.
Okay, and I'm like, definitely that's crazy.
Yeah, That's insane, because that's just under $24
for the entire year. There's a lot of content for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see where it goes. I know that, you know, my observation with Bob Iger has always been that, you know, he's been more of a, you know, and look, you could talk to anybody on the street and one person loved the guy, one person hated the guy, you know, and I think Chapek kind of got more hate than love, just honest. I didn't really have a problem with him per se, except, you know, he kind of ran everything with a business mind only and not a creative mind. Mm-hmm. I think Iger was a little bit more balanced in that sense. And I think that's, and I don't think the Disney company is bringing him in to do anything more than just kind of set things a little bit less wobbly, straighten the ship, if you will, while they,
so you think he's going to be more of an interim CEO, just kind of in there to, or do you, I mean,
you know, I well, here's the thing,
because I'll be honest, like, the guy that was in before, I didn't even know who he was. Like, Iger was the last person I remember, because I think Iger was more, maybe more out there. Like, you saw him more. He was more visible.
Bob Chapek didn't really spend a whole lot of time on social media, didn't really care what was being said about him on social media. He was there to kind of right the ship and get business booming again, especially with regards to the parks after the pandemic.
Right.
And it was like, the way that everything played out is 2 years ago, Iger stepped down as the CEO. He retired and he basically dumped everything on Chapek. And Chapek was forced to bring everything back, you know, up to snuff. And he's been working on that. But at the same time, his whole stance has been like, look, we are an entertainment company. First and foremost, we have no business in anything political. Let's back away from the politics. And people got upset about that for a variety of different reasons, whether it was right or wrong. But he wanted to focus on the entertainment aspect of what the business does and putting everything else aside so he could focus on that. And because of that, it created an issue where he started having to basically cow to some of the employees because he's only made one or two posts deliberately on social media. And one of them was some kind of formal apology that was required of him by the shareholders. And I don't even remember what that was all about. All I know is it was politically motivated.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Bob, I got to be careful which, but Chapek was, he was, and he didn't like being called this, but he was a suit. He was a numbers guy, you know, that's what he was brought in to do. Mm-hmm. And, he came from consumer products. I mean, the guy, you know, he understands that aspect of it. He's good at what he does. He just wasn't a fit for Disney.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about a company, I mean, let's think about it this way. How many people, you know, there's only been a handful of people to come out past Walt Disney himself. Okay, I know he's been dead for, 60 years, but there's really only been a handful of people that have run the entire company. You know, you can count them on one hand, but just about two hands, since Walt Disney himself passed away.
There was Roy, there was Michael Eisner.
Well, Ron Miller was in there in the middle. And that's I think there might have been an interim. And then, Michael Eisner, Bob Iger, and now then Bob Chapek. So really only like five. So, you know, when you think about that, it's a tough role to take on. And remember, Walt Disney, he didn't even do what he did. He was the complete creative character. He was the creative person. And then he had his brother Roy to kind of help with the finances behind him. So now you get to this point now in present day, or close to present day, even Michael Eisner, you know, these were people that came in that, you know, really are responsible for making Disney the powerhouse that it is, made Walt Disney World become the most popular destination to travel to in the world, made the Disney, Disney movies, brought back animation, brought back, the whole the idea of like family entertainment. And then Iger, he came in and just, enveloped, put the warm blanket of Disney around Marvel, the Muppets, Star Wars, Lucasfilm, you know, and so many other little things. Pixar. Thank you. That was the one I couldn't think of. And he did all of that. And then now all of that becomes part of the Disney bubble. And now you have the Disney MCU. You have the MCU. You have, you know, five new movies, five new streaming shows for Lucasfilm Star Wars. Not to mention a new indie movie coming out. Willow, the series, returning. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's just so much content that Iger was – I'm not saying he was directly responsible for, but he led the charge to get that to happen. So,
yeah.
And no, to say nothing about bringing X-Men back and for Fantastic Four back into the MCU, work striking a deal with Sony to get Spider-Man. You know, there's a lot that he accomplished under his leadership.
Including the assimilation of 20th Century Fox.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think that the shareholders and the board kind of felt like Chapek just seemed like everything Chapek touched was just a disaster. I know that I'm sure he did some good things too. I'm sure that there was a lot of bad things Iger did, but I just think that there were far more hits than misses with Iger under the eyes of the board. And so at this point, they're just trying to get their stock prices to not tank anymore. So they brought Iger back to do that. Will Iger, you know, right the wrongs, straighten the ship, whatever, you know, time will tell. Will there be any incredible changes? I don't know. I don't know if this affects us in the Star Wars world very much. I mean, I know that he was kind of hands-offish once things got going, and he just left it up to Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
And I think I'd imagine that will.
I mean, that seems to be kind of the Disney model for all of the things that they kind of have bought, was to be, you know, hands off and let them almost run as their own entity. You know, Marvel, while it's under the Disney banner, kind of runs as its own entity. And yeah. Star Wars, kind of Lucasfilm, kind of runs as its own entity.
Right.
And, you know, to use a historical model, it's almost like a feudal system. You have all these little fiefdoms in the Disney Empire and the Disney Kingdom, and then, you know, Disney is the overlord to all of it, and then they kind of just do their thing and are just kind of required to, you know, give them licensing, almost the licensing fees.
Right. So, No, go ahead, Jack. Go ahead, Garrett.
I was going to say, Disney as an entity has kind of, over the last few years, has kind of been like the, not to mix IPs here, but they've kind of been the Borg of the entertainment industry.
Resistance is futile.
I definitely concur.
I, for once, welcome our mouse overlord.
Yes. No, I'm for, as a Disney fan, I will say that I was not a fan of Chapek. I didn't hate the guy. I knew he was just doing what he was asked to do. I think that he just did it like a bulldozer, as opposed to being a little more delicate. And he just didn't know how to deal with people. He just didn't know how to deal with the changing times. I do think Iger made a strategic move to leave the company when he did. I think he didn't want to have to handle the whole, you know, the unknowns of the pandemic. So he kind of pushed that off on Chapek, and it makes, you know, Chapek look bad, makes Iger look like he had nothing to do with it. So who knows? None of us were in the room. We don't know exactly. But I will say that I think some people are breathing a little easier today, knowing that Iger is going to be around for a little bit. And then, you know, they'll do a proper search for, a true successor. A lot of people talk about Josh D'Amaro, who's the kind of the guy in charge of the parks directly. He's very, very well liked among the cast member community and whatnot. But he doesn't have a lot of experience outside of the parks. So I'm not sure if they're going to try to train him or something else. But by the way, if you're hearing noise in the background, it's my family. They're watching the final episode of Dancing with the Stars, and apparently it's pretty wild in there. So speaking of Disney properties. But anyway, so why don't we get to Andor?
All right, Andor.
Our the reason for us meeting here tonight. The real reason for us meeting
the
here.
The real one. Yes. Daughter of Ferrix.
And daughter of Ferrix.
Yes. I mean, just straight off, I think overall, as we're getting down to the second to last episode, next week being the last episode, I think one thing this series has done good for me is a good balancing act of making sure that no one's story that is being told, that you're not feeling like any particular story is being left out. Like, they're giving good amount of equal time for each story and building them to working together in a way that seems natural and organic. Like, you can see all these different storylines starting to come together, starting to meld together, and it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like you're just pulling something out of the air. You know, I know that was one of the critiques for Book of Boba Fett, was you spent two episodes where Boba Fett wasn't in it. We talked about that, about, you know, when we did our review of Book of Boba Fett. But in this one, it seems like they're doing a good job, a good balancing act. Like, it doesn't feel like Andor's story is being, you know, left out any for, you know, so they can do more of any of the other people's stories. You know, it's a good balancing act.
Yeah, okay. I would agree with that.
I would too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I'm having a different, just my whole feeling on this show is like opening up different areas in my psyche, as to, you know, being a Star Wars fan and what that means. And, I'm okay with it. It doesn't, you know, I mean, you know, you're looking at something that's like, well, it doesn't have laser battles. It doesn't have a lot of, doesn't have Jedi. It doesn't have this. And, you know, and I, that never really bothered me. You know, as long as it's a good story, if I'm seeing good storytelling going, taking place, and I'm captivated. And that seems to be what's doing it. Even if it is a quote unquote slow burn, as they've said, I think this episode, the specific episode, kind of returned to a slightly slower burn just because, you know, what they were dealing with. But yeah, so.
Yeah.
I'm really, I'm liking that it's here. I am liking that we have this as an adult kind of Star Wars that's more dramatic, less, you know.
Yeah, it's
less bombastic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I got that opening scene where they're just hanging by on that cliff wall and, you know, just fighting for their lives and just.
Now, are we to assume that all those guys that went swimming into the water, none of them survived?
I don't know. I mean, they even talk about that. They even kind of mentioned that, like you know, yeah, at the end, people got out.
I'm like, yeah, where did? I mean, I guess you just, you know, you don't really look around for everybody else. You're just swimming, and you come to shore, to a shore, because it kind of all kind of fanned out. Right in that about that bird's eye view of them all at the end of the previous episode, and where do they all end up? I mean, I don't know. Like, was it just Andor and Melchi that ended up on that one beach?
Yeah, I don't.
Well,
know.
It's not uncommon. I mean, when you have like stuff like that happening, where people tend to disperse as much as they possibly can because. They don't want to get caught. It's easier to get caught when you're all together.
It's hard to catch you if you go all the different directions.
I'm reminded of The Great Escape. Did you guys ever see that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
With when they all got, you know, the 52 kid people who got out, or 54 people who got out. There's not too many places for them to go. You know, they go into the woods and then they have to go to the train station, or they have to go to the border, or they have to take a boat, or they have to go, you know. So they ended up like kind of getting up into small groups, but most of them ended up getting picked up, you know.
Yeah.
So
they should have pulled something from the Muppets and traveled by map.
We can travel by map.
No, I gotta give a quick shout out to he hasn't officially been on the show before, but he's a friend of the show, Facebook friend of the show, Mike Quinn, for doing his first official character where his voice was actually heard. For those of you who don't know, you might not know, Mike Quinn was the puppeteer for Nine Nub in the original series.
And he's a friend of the show? I didn't know
he
that.
I have him on Facebook. I've talked with him before.
Oh, cool.
He's never actually been on the show before, but I've had a chance to talk with him over Facebook Messenger several times. Awesome.
It'd be great
guy.
To have him.
I know. I've been trying to. I might, see if we can get him on sometime. But he was
get
one
me
of the
back
aliens.
For that. Get me back for that episode if you do, yeah. Please.
He was one
have,
of the.
I have many questions for him.
He was one of the aliens. That
yeah.
They, and
oh,
was
the two.
The two. He was. I can't remember which one he was, but they actually. You got to use his voice. He said.
And they
the
used
first
his
time.
Voice.
They said it was the first time they used his voice for a Star Wars character.
I am so glad you mentioned that. I did not know that.
I just want to talk to him because he knew. Not only did he know Frank Oz, he knows Frank Oz personally. He also knew
Jim Henson.
Jim Henson. He was trained by Jim Henson.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that would be a great conversation to have. I mean, he's been a very active puppeteer in the business.
Very awesome.
But those characters. But before we get to that, though, we got to talk about poor Emo, B2 Emo. With his grieving droid.
Such a heartbreaking scene.
Oh, I know.
That almost rivaled. I know.
It was so childlike.
Yeah.
Like, he's been around for probably quite a while, but still he has this childlike innocence about him. And not understanding, what's going on. Anybody who's had a child who has children and has had someone in their family pass away that their child knew knows how difficult that is to explain that to a small child. And that was just so hard. Well, that whole thing of
they wanted to clear the room for him, if he wanted to be. I have it on kind of like just to remind me because I watched it almost a week ago. So, that's just and then the chair and the empty chair with the cane. It's like Tiny Tim.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
you're crutch in the corner.
I never thought I'd cry over a robot.
I know. Well, he's like if Wally and Vincent from Black Hole had a baby droid, and the two of them had a lot of, the emotion of both of those droids too. So really funny.
Gosh, yes.
And then finding out what the people do with the citizens of Barrack.
I love
they
that.
Become part of the
those
city.
Kind of, those
oh, I want right to do now. That. Yeah. I thought that's fantastic. I'm like, man, they should so do that like everywhere. It'd be better for the environment. It would be so good.
Yeah. Anyway. That was a cool little touch. And it brought this sense of like, I don't know what to say realism, but it felt like something like grounded, like something like, it just felt very, very, in keeping with what we know, and it made Ferrix seem like the culture seem more real and more
again,
like this was specific.
Every one of these shows, these different series, just builds the world more. And I appreciate it.
But even bringing in the religious aspect with Chandrilla. You saw the daughter, her daughter in that thing. Yeah. They're all chanting the old ways, the old way.
Say one. I'm sorry. We're up to the fisherman now, and I'm just laughing at the fact that I had to watch it three times before I understood what they were saying.
It's
almost very, like the people are like, you think Yoda was hard to understand? Here we go. We're going to give you these two fishermen. These salty types.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're just kind of wondering, like, what's going on? Are they going to try and eat them? Are they going to try and
catch them with
what's
the net?
Going on?
I know. And then I love the appearance of the quad jumper. Quad jumper.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, I'm liking that they do a little bit of, you know, I enjoy when they're building the world both forward and backward. Okay. You know, obviously the quad jumper made a brief appearance in The Force Awakens. And I like that, you know, they're not like, you know, forgetting about the sequel trilogy any more than they're not forgetting about the prequel trilogy. You know, they seem to be embracing the entire world. And I think it's smart. Yeah. So I enjoy that.
Although I do have a question when he went back to Space Miami. How long was he gone? Because he couldn't have been gone that long because
a couple of weeks.
Yeah, because the box that he put up there, the safe that he put up there was still there. And is it like just open air? Did he just like walk in and like
I'm guessing that my answer to that would be that it's a cheap hotel and they don't really clean it that well. Yeah. They kind of sweep the floor, change the sheets from one room to the next, and then same thing with the towels. Yeah. And you know that's it. That's what you're getting.
Yeah.
So the fact that he had a thing like tucked way up top high above a high unit does make sense to me that it would most likely still be there. But yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, just the fact that he's sneaking around while someone else is sleeping in the room. So just like,
I know. And again, it took me a second viewing to realize that there were two people in the room.
Oh.
Or was it more than two?
There's at least two. Maybe three.
There's at least two. There could have been a third in there. Yeah. So it's just
the galaxy's hysterical. Full of debauchery.
You know, hey, it was Space Miami. What happens in Space Miami stays in Space Miami. So it's all good. So, yeah. But I guess, you know, it was nice to see them kind of formulate this relationship between Andor and Melchi, you know, and so many people were like, why is this guy important? And I'm like, did you not watch Rogue One? You know, I mean, but it's not like it wasn't like it was, you know, Chirrut or Baze or something like that. It was like he wasn't part of their team, you know. But but they put him in there, which I thought was great.
Yeah,
I like the consistency that they're doing to keep in the tie-in to Rogue One. It makes it feel a little bit more organic, a little bit more planned out.
Yeah. And we're seeing more and more with Mon Mothma. We're seeing, you know, I think we're moving to her, you know, having to, you know, flee and, you know, kind of form. We're seeing the beginnings of the forming of the rebellion, obviously. But I think we're definitely getting towards, you know, her having to flee Coruscant and leave and go. Which is going to be, I think, it's going to be kind of cool.
You know, coming up to the scene now with the with Mon Mothma coming into the shop and talking to the assistant, to the girl.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm amazed because, like, I don't like that girl. I don't like the assistant. You know, first of all, she's the one who wants to go and set, you know, kill Cassian. So that's going to come to a head.
Yeah.
Probably next episode. And, you know, oh no, not Mon Mothma, the cousin, the other girl, yeah, the blonde, and they're talking, and I just I don't know, it's just these people to me are, it's like what Luthen said in the previous episode, you know, they have sacrificed everything, you know, they are not good people, they are not kind people, they're not.
Let's talk about that. Talk about sacrifice.
Yeah,
I mean, Luthen willing to sacrifice an entire. Not just one person, but an entire group of, and telling, like, you know, going to what's his name?
They're going to go to such great lengths.
Oh yeah, going to Saul and say, you know, basically telling him like, yeah, you don't want to do this because he's walking into a trap, and it's like, and then basically saying, yeah, I'm not going to tell him. I'm not going to, because those you know, however many people are going to be sacrificed in that, it's going to be for the greater good.
Right.
You know, in his mind, at least. You know, that he's willing to throw, you know, literally, you know, have people killed. Like, there's no doubt that the people going into that battle for that attack are going to get slaughtered.
Exactly.
And he's perfectly fine with it, because in his mind, it's for the greater good. You know, to use a Star Trek, to Kuros IPs, the needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many. And in this case, the lives of the few outweigh the lives of the
many. I think you've got that backward. The needs of the
many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yeah.
Right. And that's definitely a truism at this point in this episode. And, you know, it's, you know, but again, these are not, you know, rebellions are not formed with kindness. You know, there's a lot behind, you know, kind of hiding behind it. And it's fascinating to see the way it forms.
Yeah. I mean, one thing we've talked about this before, that, you know, Star Wars in the past has always been very black and white. You know, especially if you look at the original trilogy, it's very, you know, the rebels are the good guys, the Empire's the bad guys, and, you know, the rebels are fighting for truth, justice in the Republic way. You know, and the Empire, you know, space Nazis and all that. And I think, you know, Rogue One and especially Andor now is doing a really good job of showing those gray areas, that, you know, the rebels weren't all sunshine and rainbows and kumbaya.
Right.
That.
No, they're not. And then, you know, it's a gray area, and, you know, they're being very good.
And showing how people could, on the other side, could view the rebels, you know, the Alliance as terrorist, as something bad. You know, if you're in the, you know, in the area where the rebels are doing these attacks and, you know, setting up these ambushes, you know, there's, you know, you got family members that are being killed on both sides, and
Well, that's, you know, and that's war, you know.
Well, and the funny thing about this is that we're starting to see just how strained the individual relationships are going to be, because of, you know, people's allegiances, and because, like, you know, Mon Mothma's, you know, having these conversations with Vel, and, you know, while both she and her sister are, you know, in agreement that the rebellion needs to take place, that there needs to be some movement towards defeating the Empire, their understanding of how things should be done and what lives should be spent and all that are drastically different.
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
Just like an emo, B2 emo, you know, asking the friend, "You could stay," you know, like he's trying to take
that another heart. Yeah,
I'm like, stay. And then he got like all pepped up when he's like, "All right, I'll stay one night." You know, it's like, oh my god, it's like a toddler.
Yeah, definitely. You know,
and then poor Binks getting tortured. That torture, I forgot all about that with the screams.
That. And can we talk about the worst Imperial spy in the history of the Imperial spy? The most obvious Imperial spy, that's Alden Ferrix.
Oh, right.
Like, everyone's like, yep, that's a spy. Yep.
Yeah, well.
I do like that they at least take the effort to have him dress in, like, civilian, you know, at least try to look like he belongs, like he's not out of place.
They went to that effort.
They went to that effort.
But beyond that, that was like the basic effort, because after that,
yeah. he's the most conspicuous spy ever. It's like, I mean, going back to the idea of James Bond, everybody knew James Bond was a spy. He walks in, they're like, "Oh, who are you?" He's like, "Oh, I'm Bond." Doesn't use a cover name, doesn't use an alias, no. Doesn't use any kind of backstory, nothing. He just walks in, and I'm like, "Dude, you're throwing out your real name? What is wrong with you?"
Well, I mean, there is the fan theory that Bond is a code name, that that's one of the theories that Bond is not his real name, but it is his cover name.
Guys, that's just one of so many things that is just weird about the James Bond stories. You know, yeah. I mean, let alone the villain like taking, you know, giving away the entire plan while, you know,
that's a classic.
The classic trope of, you know, Bond being in some elaborate,
I love monologuing,
you know,
method
of killing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed one thing that I have liked. Other than Wolf Lauren, the ISB leader, the guy who's the head of the ISB, Wolf.
Yeah, I can't remember that guy's name.
Yularen. Yularen.
Yeah.
Wolf Yularen.
Wolf Yularen. We haven't had any original, you know, anybody from the either, you know, characters from the original trilogy show up. Mon Mothma, obviously. But other than that, you know, we haven't had a lot of, you know, which I kind of like. You know, I think, you know, it's good to have
The world. You got to build the world. It has to be bigger than what we're used to. You know, that in order to do that, you got to limit. You don't have to have none. I think I like that that's Mon Mothma. I like that Wolf Yularen was represented. But I'm glad that they didn't just make him the one that was in charge of the sect. You know, like they had that other guy that did that, and Wolf was kind of like the one kind of overseeing the whole thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I mean, the fact that, you know, we haven't seen, you know, we've had mention of Palpatine, but we haven't seen him, which I think is perfectly fine, because
very reclusive at this point.
Yeah. And it goes into what we kind of has been kind of established within the original trilogy, was that at this point, he had kind of retreated in and was letting the imperial governors and kind of everything kind of run the day-to-day business of the empire while he was doing his Sith thing and kind of ruling from afar.
True.
You know?
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about the daughter, Mon Mothma's daughter, and her. You know, I have her earlier in our episodes, reviewing the episodes, I kind of theorized that she might be like somebody who's going to turn on her or something of that nature.
Yeah.
I don't think that is where this is going. I mean, I could be wrong. It could happen that way. But I think now that they're going to, she's going to do the whole, you know, betrother. So she's, you know, like with the criminal's son. Yeah. So that, and I think the daughter's going to want that. You know, it seems like her disconnect with her mom is just, you know, standard, you know, teenage angst and being, you know, kind of against your parents. But it just so happens that her mother, Mon Mothma, is more of a liberal, you know, more of a democratic, if you will. And, you know, the daughter is leaning more towards the old ways, the more, what did they say, more, like the old.
Traditional, the more conservative.
Traditional, conservative, kind of that thing. So I think she'd be totally down with, you know, the whole betrothal thing, that it, you know, if and when Mon Mothma presents it. So
yeah,
but we still see. There may be more to that story. There may be more of this. You know, I don't know if they're going to get to everything tomorrow or tomorrow when the next episode comes out, or not tomorrow, Wednesday. But you know, we'll see. And it might have to wait.
One thing I need to go back a little bit, because I made I don't remember if we talked about it, but one thing I mistook with one of the previous episodes, the first time they went and went to Saul. I thought that was the X-Wing that was out there.
It's a headhunter.
It's a Z95.
Yeah, yeah. The Z29 Headhunter.
Yeah, Z95. The Headhunter. Yeah, at first I was like, oh, it's an X-Wing. Then I saw something like, no, that's a Z95. So, which shows, it's cool that ship is, you know, being made canon. You know, the precursor to the X-Wing being out there. That's kind of cool to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see what. Oh, now, yeah, we got that. We got to talk about the brief scene with what's his name and his annoying mother.
Cyril.
Thank you.
Cyril.
Talking to his old security buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just basically giving information about just getting him to know that, you know, that Cassian's mother died, right? That all that information is getting passed along to everybody, and everyone's going to return. Which I mean, like, wow, is he that important? I guess he is. So,
yeah.
I have expected Cyril to just like when his mother was sitting there observing and just, you know, kind of looming behind him about the call, and she makes that snide little comment at the end of it, like. I half expected just the way with the music and the way he was looking, like I half expected him to just walk into the bedroom or whatever room she was in and just clunk her over the head and just finally be done.
Yeah.
Like I'm waiting for that one scene to happen because I feel like he's really leaning towards finally just offing his mom because she's been driving him nuts.
He has some, psychotic leanings.
There's a real Norman Bates here going.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Although Norman Bates was kind of like there was an incestual thing going on there too, sort of. So that's not that. He just outright hates his mom. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know. So we'll see.
Well, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see. Yeah.
I looking at this and all the different, I keep saying world building. I just love, you know, the look of everything. Like, you know, it shows him, you know, going back to that hotel in Space Miami to open up just the box that he opened up and, you know, everything. It was such with the credits and everything. It was just such
the weapon.
It just had such a great, and the manifest. He kept the manifest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
And I like that conversation at the end with him and you said the guy's name. The guy he escaped with.
Melchi.
And Melchi saying, you know, we have to tell people. We have to, you know, let people know what's going on. And then, you know, kind of that, you know, parting of ways where they know they have to part ways, but
yeah,
you know this, and one person pointed out on Screen Crush. They pointed this out when you hear the opening song, the opening thing for Andor, how each one it's building.
Yeah, I'm still not a fan of it though. Still not liking it.
Yeah,
it's building to what essentially, and again, this is just my opinion, building to what essentially amounts is not much. Yeah. Can either of you sing the melody?
No.
Can you hum it? No.
No.
Mandalorian. Da 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 boom. Boba Fett. Boom. Da 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 da. Boom. I could do them both.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't do.
Well, you're also a band director.
All right. Yeah. I know. But I'm
you're the music guy.
Okay. I'm the music guy. I'll give you that. But I'm the music guy, and I still can't do Andor. So think about that.
True.
Okay, that's fair because I mean, yeah, sure, I play guitar and bass, but yeah, it's also I'm running on very little sleep today, and my brain doesn't want to do anything.
I'm with you, pal. It's all right. No, I mean, some people are talking like going nuts over it. And again, I just think it's a style of composition that is used under, you know, for TV and movies that I just am not, it doesn't resonate with me. That's basically all I can say.
Fair enough.
But, I mean, I do appreciate that it's building though. I have to say that. I do appreciate
what they were saying was that like the first episode is just, you know, a couple of instruments. Then they add, you know, a little bit more, then they add a little bit more, and each one is kind of layering on with all these different instruments and building up.
Can we just talk for a second about the fact that Andor, when he's mourning the loss of his mother, is staring out at the beach, at the ocean, and it is a reflection of, or at least a callback to, the way he stares out the water at the end of Rogue One.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. That's like foreshadowing.
Ooh, definitely.
A lot of foreshadowing going on. And it's done well.
It's not, I wouldn't call it slammed over the head. Just, you know.
No.
So we're getting into what are our predictions, our thoughts, our ideas about what will be happening in.
I definitely think next episode you'll see everyone kind of come together in one way, you know, maybe not like Mon Mothma there, but I do. But I think you'll see, you know, I don't know how much closure we'll get with the story because things as we're getting a second season. But I definitely think you will see. I think you'll see closure with creepy guy. I think something will happen with that. But I think you'll see, you know, building towards. I think this episode is definitely building towards the foundation of the rebellion.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's just a question of which one of the side characters. You know, obviously we know Andor is going to come out of it, and we know Mon Mothma is going to come out of it. But other than that,
it's Melchi. Kind of, Melchi will come out of it.
You think Melchi will come out of it? Yeah,
he has to come out of it because he's with him in Rogue One. So
yeah.
So those three we know are coming out of it.
Yeah,
I'm hoping for B2 Emo.
Yeah,
Saw Gerrera. If Saw Gerrera ends up with it, yeah, I'm hoping for B2 Emo too, but. If you don't see him later, we're wondering why. Why wasn't he?
My prediction is Cyril does not come out.
He probably just didn't recharge.
I think I hope he comes out. I hope B2 Emo comes out because I want to see B2 Emo and K2SO.
Oh.
That'll be like the new R2 and 3PO next year. Just for a few.
I don't need them having a conversation with R2. I want to be in the room for that conversation.
Oh.
I want them in the room with R2 and 3PO. That would just be, you know, oh my God, that would be phenomenal. That would be gold. It would.
Only K2SO and R2 would be on the same level because they would both be purposely trying to annoy 3PO.
Yes. Although B2 Emo does speak words, so, you know.
Yeah.
This is true. And he would probably be just like avoiding that part of the conversation because he's worried about whatever else he's worried about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's super anxious.
Yeah. But like I was saying, I predict Cyril will not come out. I think Cyril dies.
Okay.
In the next episode. That's my prediction. And I wouldn't be surprised. And as much as I like him, if Luthen doesn't die in this next episode too, I don't know if he's signed on for episode
what
two.
With Dedra.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think she's gonna continue to be the main antagonist of season two. I think that is gonna continue. I think that's gonna be, you know, that will continue into season two. I think season two will focus a lot on just the, you know, now that we've built the rebellion, I think you're going to bring, I think that's going to, you know, have a bigger focus on the sister in season two. Because we haven't, other than a few mentions here and there, you know, in the, you know, in the first few episodes, there hasn't really been much mention of her.
Right.
So I think that's going to be, you know.
Oh, one. I'm sorry. I don't know why I didn't do this since the beginning. I just have it on mute in the background.
Yeah.
Just to remind me of things to talk about. Let's talk about Luthen's ship.
Oh
my God.
That was, yes.
Lightsaber ship.
The first thing
I thought was,
somebody was like,
prequel trilogy.
Prequel trilogy.
Have you tried spinning? That's a neat trick.
And it was, yeah, but with Darth Maul's lightsabers on each side.
Yeah.
I'm like,
Well, I love the, someone pointed out the, made a joke about the jamming thing that he had.
Oh, right.
Star Tours. Spaceballs.
We've been jamming.
Raspberry.
I hate raspberry.
Nobody gives me the raspberry.
Raspberry. Oh.
That was a cool ship,
though. We need to do sometime. Yeah. A review of Spaceballs.
Yes. I'd do it more like a rewatch.
Rewatch of Spaceballs. Yes.
We should live stream a watch party.
I'm in for that.
Definitely. But yeah, that was cool. It was cool to see that ship, that style of Imperial ship too.
Yeah.
It was neat. Well, you know, again, it's just like, the only thing that bothers me, guys, is that as a collector, a minor rant as we wrap up. My collecting is changing, you know, and evolving. There's a lot of things that I'm looking through, and I'm actually getting ready to unload, and to thin out. I still do some collecting, but I haven't been picking up all the figures that have been coming out, only because, you know, prices are going up and up and up, and it's, you know, there's some figures I have absolutely no connection with, like ones that are from video games and things. But when I see this show, I do want to get characters to add to my collection from the show, and there are some that are coming out. But then I see the ships, and I'm like, oh, in the old days, I'm nostalgic for the 70s and 80s when you knew a ship was coming. You knew Luthen's ship would be a playset ship that would be, you know, up for sale the next year. And, you know, we just don't do it. It doesn't happen anymore. It's just gotten too expensive for them to make, and they just don't make them. So I just look at it and go, oh, you know, or they make smaller ones, you know, like more micro size or whatever, which is fine. Yeah. But, you know, I love that. But anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited. We'll see how the season ends.
Yeah, we will. Next week, we will be, next week.
Talking about
the final episode. So,
really quick, before we wrap up, have you guys seen the Studio Ghibli mashup with Lucasfilm, the Zen Grogu?
Yes. The Zen Grogu.
It is so adorable.
It's absolutely adorable. It's only like a minute long.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, if you subscribe to StarWars.com, I believe it's on there, and it'll come up on your feed.
Okay.
But it is adorable.
It's also on Disney Plus.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, good. It's like 2 or 3 minutes, something like that, but from beginning to end. But I play it for my son, and he absolutely loves it. It's one of those videos because it's very calming, and he just by the time he's done watching whatever, if I turn it on while he's getting really, you know, hyped up about something, and I turn it on, he calms down because he's watching it. And I think it's a mix of the music and the animation, and then he's fairly good after that. So
nice,
cool.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, before we wrap up, we have a little house cleaning to do here. As you might have noticed the last couple weeks, we have not been live streaming. We are not going to be doing any more weekly live streams just because with the new recording system that StreamYard is having, it makes it a whole lot easier to record straight from here. there other than to live stream. We might still do some live streams here and there for special occasions, stuff like that. But that is we're not going to be doing just weekly live streams like we were. So if you were checking out our live streams, we apologize for that. But we will still be posting them on our Facebook group. We'll still be posting the shows on all our social media platforms, including we're going to start putting up the video on our YouTube page. As soon as I get that cleaned up, we'll be putting that back. And we might as well take the cat out of the bag. Will has kind of hinted around at it, but we've not made any official announcements yet. But next week will be Will's last show with us as a permanent host.
Tear.
Yes.
Tears. Sad.
We will definitely miss Will. He's been a great addition to the show. He came in on a time when, honestly, we really needed a co-host. We had lost our other two co-hosts. I'd lost my other two co-hosts. They had to step down for various reasons, and we were looking, and he was able to step in, and he's done a great job. He will still be around every once in a while. He has said he'd be more than willing to come in as a special guest, but just personal reasons and things going on, he's not able to it on a weekly basis. So
yeah, there's just a lot for the people, you know, anybody who watches and listens who knows me knows that the kind of life I lead, and yeah. it's just you know, coming out of COVID, there was nothing going on, but now, you know, we're pretty much over that. What's yeah. COVID, you know, and now we're back to normal, and the life I lead now has gotten more complicated with a lot of other things. Nothing bad. No, I will say that. No. I don't want anybody to think that I'm suffering from any kind of illness or anything. I'm doing great. Yeah.
Also wanted to do this so that people didn't think that there was some sort of, you know, something between, you know, us, that there was bad blood. You know, no. We wish them, you know, wish you the best, Will. But me and Garrett will carry on. And
you guys will do awesome, I'm sure. And
I hope. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you will. So. Absolutely. You guys are going to be great. Garrett brings a lot of awesome perspective to the programming.
Yes.
And I do like having to get the opportunity to talk with you guys. And I do hope to be in from time to time. It's just hard to commit to the weekly thing.
Maybe you can give us a wrap up after your.
That's going to happen. But even before that, I hope. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. You can count on a Halcyon talk.
Yeah.
But I'd like to also, you know, get in on if there's any discussion. I'm trying to think of like when Mandalorian comes out. I don't know if I can commit to every week episodes, but maybe just, you know, like a wrap up or the first episode or something like that. So we'll talk about
definitely,
it.
Definitely. Why don't you tell us then, Will, where people can find you at?
Well, now, and you will be able to continue to find me on YouTube, the Darth Tuba Star Wars Unboxing channel on YouTube. And kind of my favorite time of year is the holidays. And there's always such a great holiday stuff that I kind of do on the channel, a little bit different, that I'm looking forward to sharing out with all of you. And you can find me there. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Darth Tuba, Darth Tuba Star Wars Unboxing page on Facebook. And you can email me, darthtuba77@gmail.com.
All right. And Garrett, where can people find you at?
Well, you guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GKJ_publishing. I'm constantly on there doing stuff. I just actually did a reveal for the cover art for my new book, which will hopefully be coming out by the end of this year or early part of next year. You can also find me on YouTube, GKJ Publishing. Where I do all sorts of different videos. I do weekly or monthly top 10 recommended books, author interviews. This next Saturday coming up, which is the Saturday after Thanksgiving, I have a new set of world building creative writing tips for anybody who wants to learn about world building for my Creator's Corner segment. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. As for right here, you can. If you want to get a hold of us, of course, you can email us. The email address is warofthestars1@gmail.com. You can also check us out on all our social media platforms. Twitter is @WarOfTheStars1. Go to our Facebook group. Just type in War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast. We are on YouTube. As always, you can check out some of our old shows. And as I said, we will be putting up the video version of that. So make sure to like and subscribe. You can also check us out on Instagram. Again, War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast. You can check us out wherever fine podcasts are heard. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm. Just check those out. If you're on Apple Podcasts, remember to give us a 5-star review. It goes a long way to helping us out on the channel. If you want to support the show, patreon.com/War of the Stars. As I said, we got some big plans coming up in the next year. I plan on rolling out those ideas that I have after the holidays are over. Check those out. Get ready for those big announcements on Patreon, or you can go and check out our merch store at
Spreadshirt.com.
Yeah. I couldn't remember them. Yeah. .com/shop/War of the Stars. Check out the cool merch we have there. As always, we are also, remember, a part of the Red 5 Network. Red5Network.com for all the information on all the shows on the Red 5 Network. Cool bunch of guys. Great bunch of guys there. And that is about it. As always, remember, this is not just my Star Wars. This is not just your Star Wars. This is our Star Wars. Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Till the spires, everyone.
This is the way.